Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, August the 20th. And it's time for our State Capitol Report, where we review the previous week in state politics and preview the week to come. Usually, our state government reporter, Sean Johnson, joins us for the first half hour of the State Capitol Report, but since he hasn't had a single Monday off since we started this feature in January, we agreed to let him go on vacation this week. And we are happy to have with us instead Jeff Mayers from WisPolitics.com. Jeff will let us know the most significant developments in state politics in the past week and describe the progress or lack of progress in the state budget negotiations and answer your questions and respond to your views about issues making the news in the state of Wisconsin. 1-800-642-1234, our toll-free number to join in the State Capitol Report. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. We wonder if you care or don't care that the state budget has not been resolved yet. We wonder if you think there should be more of a sense of urgency or if it's okay with you that budget negotiations just keep on going and going and going. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. And by the way, after 7:30, we will look at a bill that's going to get a public hearing, a legislative hearing this week on Thursday, a bill that directs the State Department of Public Instruction to come up with a policy regarding school bullying. We'll be welcoming in State Senator Neil Kedzie to talk about that bill after 7:30. Right now, we welcome in Jeff Mayers, who is president of WisPolitics.com. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being with us.
No problem.
So, Sean apparently picked a good week to be on vacation. I mean, not a whole lot going on with that state budget anyway. What's happening?
Well, August, even in a around the world in government is a usually slumber time. So, yeah, he wouldn't miss too much. But we do have these budget talks going on. I think negotiations, I think it's too high of a term at the moment. I don't think they're really into – I think they've just really started the process of renegotiating a budget after the Joint Finance Committee kicked one out a couple months ago. So it's slow going. I don't think the high pressure is on – the conferees yet to reach a compromise. So, I mean, early on, we had predictions from folks that this, could be an October budget, or the pessimists even said a November budget. And, so I think that the real action probably wouldn't happen until later in September or October.
Yeah, well, why isn't there a lot of pressure on lawmakers to come up with some sort of budget compromise?
Well, there's not a hard deadline. Unlike in other states, the government doesn't shut down in Wisconsin. In some states, the government actually shuts down. That forces a crisis. The governor and the top legislative leaders go behind closed doors and figure it out in a matter of days, hours or days, instead of weeks or months. That's the short answer. That just doesn't happen in Wisconsin. So there's no hard pressure point. It's not until there's public criticism, I think, and the realization that local governments have to get their budget set and property taxes have to get set, all those kind of things. Once you're up against those deadlines, then I think then they get to it.
So, Jeff, how long will it be? I'm looking at your feature that's in the State Journal on Sunday that talks about state politics, and this one says, how long will it take before the do-nothing legislature headlines start dominating TV coverage and newspaper editorials? How long will it be?
I think it'll be into September before that happens. As I said, this is Wisconsin, this is the summer. And I think that the public attention, public pressure isn't there. Governor Doyle could bring a lot of pressure on if he talked about it constantly. But, this is kind of a free ride for him in a way, too. He goes around the state, and he has the opportunity. He has the firm hold of the bully pulpit on the budget. He can go around the state, criticize the Republican budget, and get some mileage out of that. And so, and then he can, at some point, he can assert some public pressure of his own. But I think that for the moment, this is a good political ride for him to be able to go around and criticize the Republican budget. And yeah, after all, it is the legislature's job to forward the budget to the governor. But at some point, I mean, he's going to get involved, and most likely legislators in the end. Won't look good out of all of it. I mean, we've done some polling early on, and people say that, if this stretches on and on, they'll blame legislators. So, I mean, I think, as I said, it's a good political ride for the governor.
We're talking with Jeff Mayers from WisPolitics.com, talking about developments in state politics in the past week, and we'll preview what state lawmakers will be up to in the week to come as well. And again, we welcome your questions for Jeff at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 17 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, August the 20th. Ben Marins is with you this afternoon between 4 and 6 for At Issue with Ben Marins. Ben will host his August open line after 4 o'clock this afternoon. You are invited to offer program topics, guest ideas, and feedback about the program after 4 o'clock this afternoon. We are talking with Jeff Mayers of WisPolitics.com about developments in state government and state politics in the past week, and we're welcoming your thoughts and questions for him. I guess nobody cares that there's not a state budget. It's not bugging you at this point. It's okay that there's no progress there. Wisconsin is one of only a few states without a state budget. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Plus, Jeff, anything else happened last week besides lack of progress in the budget negotiations?
Well, before we move off the budget, I think we should note that it's not unprecedented for the budget to go into October. I think in recent history, you have a legislative budget got final passage on October 27, 1971. That's in the first year of Governor Lucey's term. And then in probably more folks here remember the October 6, 1999 passage of the state budget. That's when Tommy Thompson was governor, Scott Jensen was the assembly speaker, and Chuck Quala was the Senate Majority Leader. So you had a split legislature and a Republican governor. Here you have and in Lucey's time, he had a Democratic governor and a split legislature. Here you have a Democratic governor and a split legislature. So, I mean, I think that, a budget is a financial document, but it's also a political document. So the political sides have to reach agreement. They enter this budget further apart than most other budgets. They're diametrically opposed on a lot of things. And so, and there's some really, big issues that they really haven't taken a run at yet in terms of trying to find middle ground.
Yeah.
So in other words, like I said, a lot of this, like the health care thing, the obvious compromise might be Doyle's original budget proposal, not the Senate plan, not the assembly plan.
Yeah.
They just and so big issues take time, especially when you have and this is nothing against the leadership here, but you have a group of leaders who really haven't been part of such a big budget negotiation before. Yeah, they've been on the finance committee or whatever, but sitting in a conference committee making this happen, I mean, they don't have the experience. There's some of that going on. And so they've broken into groups, which is a natural thing, because you're not going to have a budget process, serious budget negotiations take place around a table where there's a bunch of reporters watching. That's just not the way it works. So they're breaking it up, and I think they're finally on a pathway to get there. It's just the pressure isn't there. It's taken them a while to get to this point.
Let me bring in some callers who have joined us on the budget. Barbara in Milwaukee, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm wondering what kind of impact the lack of budget has on the local school budgets.
Shouldn't there be? Don't local school officials need to have a state budget in place to know how much money they're getting, Jeff?
Right. But their deadlines are a little bit further down the pathway here. So, you know, in the fall, they'll have to know that so they can set their budgets and the levies can be set and your property tax bills can be sent out. Okay, so that's not quite there yet. Like I said, that's one of the pressure points coming up.
Mm-hmm. Mike in Ozaukee County. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thinking that Ozaukee County being a Republican stronghold, maybe no budget would be a good strategy. It will hold spending at the last biennium, and it'll avoid a compromise, which would increase taxes, and it would avoid any of the Democrats' desires to spend even more money.
Yes. This
strategy.
Right. I mean, a lot of Republicans, conservative Republicans, say this when the budget doesn't get passed. It's like, well, yeah, so what? We're spending at last biennium's levels. That's a good thing, right? It is until I think from the political standpoint. Then, if it wouldn't matter who was perceived as the roadblocker, but if you go back to when Clinton and Gingrich had their showdown in 94. Over a federal government shutdown, which wasn't, which was a piecemeal shutdown. Gingrich came out the loser because you had a Democratic president, and he was able to make everybody perceive that Gingrich was the bad actor there. I think the same thing could likely play out here. So Republicans talk about this often when a budget doesn't get passed on time, but it just sort of they get the pressure even from their Republican districts that, it's time to do this. People are impatient, and so I think almost always it turns out to be the other way. There is a compromise at the end.
Yeah, when Mike says that maybe this is good because then our taxes won't go up, what are the biggest areas of differences between the Democrats and the Republicans when it comes to the budget? The taxes that would go up in the Senate Democrats' version of the budget would be what, the cigarette tax, the oil tax, and maybe the payroll tax should this health care thing go through?
Right, and those are big items. Remember that the Assembly Republicans were making a symbolic statement in many ways. They were passing a budget that had absolutely no, without having any major tax or fee increases. There were some minor ones in there. So they were making a symbolic statement. They were also, when you go into a negotiation, you want to have as many chits as possible. Democrats did the same thing. And I think the big items in there that people know about are the oil tax, which is would show up at the pumps as a gasoline tax, and this payroll tax, 10%. That's fairly significant.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I forgot about the hospital tax or this.
The hospital tax is mm-hmm. another one, and the real estate transfer fee is another one.
You want to talk some about the Hospital Association, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, and Wisconsin Education Association Council being big spenders when it comes to lobbying from the news last week?
Sure. I mean, and I think the Wisconsin Hospital Association one is indicative of the budget. They usually have a lot of spending surrounding the budget, and the lobby reports to the Ethics Board come in into only they cover the first half year of spending. They're not covering the spending that's going on right now by lobbyists who are putting in vouchers for what's going on for their work right now. But you had the State Hospital Association, Wisconsin Hospital Association spending. They were number one in the lobby list for lobby spending at $434,000. And a lot of that has to do with fighting the hospital assessment. The hospital assessment is part of Doyle's effort to secure more federal money for his health care plan, which he says would insure up to 98% of Wisconsinites. His is a middle ground step toward the universal health care plan that the Senate Democrats went for with the payroll tax. But anyway, part of the reason the hospital association is spending all that money is to fight the hospital assessment. WEAC and WMC, they're perennial big spenders because they're political powerhouses and they lobby on a lot of issues. WEAC tending to lobby mostly for Democratic pro-union issues. WMC, hardliner against taxes, so they would be lobbying for the Assembly Republican positions for the most part.
Yeah. Anything else from last week that that's worth noting here before we maybe take a quick preview of the week to come?
Well, we had test scores. The ACT test scores were out. Sort of a mixed bag on that because while Wisconsin again ranked very high, the educators are upset about the racial disparity that mm-hmm. shows up. Although this is mostly a local issue in terms of how schools train kids, a lot of the policies and the money whip through the state capitol.
Yeah. I did see also that Governor Doyle, you'd mentioned that he's kind of slamming on the Republican budget. One thing that he was upset about last week was the cuts to the stewardship fund.
Right. Mm-hmm. The stewardship fund has, although that was a political compromise forged under Thompson, who in the end, I think even environmentalists would agree, had a decent conservation record in terms of land buying. This has never been a favorite with conservative Republicans. So in their budget, they took a whack at it. Again, this has been, over the years, with Doyle, a political winner for him. And so, like I said, this is providing political opportunity for Doyle.
Yeah. So what are you going to be looking for in the week to come?
The weeks to come, well.
This coming week.
This coming week.
What's going to make headlines this week?
We have the Government Accountability Board is going to hold an organizational meeting. Now, the government that's on Thursday, mm-hmm. and the Government Accountability Board is the new entity that's going to take over for both the Ethics Board and the Elections Board. But they've been running behind in getting organized, and they're supposed to start up on September 1, but they're not really going to be going that fast. But anyway, they're holding an organizational meeting on Thursday. You also have the on Thursday the governor's annual highway safety conference, which I think there's been some issues in the news that are likely to come up there. One of them has to be with a motorcycle safety, which is there's been motorcycle deaths are running ahead of the usual, and so those are. That's a problematic area for highway safety planners and policymakers. And there's also a bill out there by a former chair of the assembly, by the current chair of the assembly committee, Jerry Petrosky. He wants to ban cell phones and wireless devices for under 18 for certain categories of under 18 drivers. For them to use cell phones.
Well, there's going to be plenty for us to talk about next week, then, I guess, for the State Capitol Report. We're done with this segment. Jeff, thanks very much for being with us.
Happy to help,
Jeff. Yeah. Jeff Mayers from WisPolitics.com.
Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 7:36 on this Monday morning, August the 20th. Good to have you along for our State Capitol Report. This week, there will be a legislative hearing on a bill that deals with the issue of school bullying. And we'll have an unofficial public hearing on the bill this half hour with one of the authors of the bill, Neil Kedzie, a state senator from Elkhorn. And we'll welcome your thoughts about this, your questions about whether Wisconsin needs some sort of statewide policy to prevent or deal with school bullying. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Neil Kedzie is a Republican state senator from Elkhorn, author of SB 42, which addresses school bullying. There will be a hearing on the bill on Thursday, August 23rd at 10 o'clock
at the state capitol. And Senator Kedzie joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Pleasure to be with
you. Yeah, thanks. So why do we need this bill?
Well, this bill was introduced back in 2005. I authored the bill along with Senator Coggs from Milwaukee. And it was in response to what we had seen as an ongoing and growing problem over time. I mean, we're deluged by it in the news constantly about kids claiming that they have been bullied and has resulted in either negative consequences by their returning the bullying or in cases, in severe cases, kids that have said that they, or families have told us that their kids actually committed suicide. And, you know, there was a news story that had been done in Milwaukee following some stories in the Milwaukee County area that went about looking at what is happening in our schools in Wisconsin, not just southeastern Wisconsin, but the entire state.
Mm-hmm.
And they found that to a very, very large degree, either kids were being bullied, or teachers were saying that they don't get help from the school district in addressing the issue. And it was far more widespread than anyone anticipated. And it's time that we step in. 24 other states in the country have laws on record against bullying. Wisconsin does not.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that. Don't at least most local districts have some sort of a program or something on their local books when it comes to bullying?
Well, on the contrary, mm-hmm. they don't. Matter of fact, the vast majority of schools do not have policies in place. Many of them are unwritten. Or they're very vague.
Mm-hmm.
And what we want to do is try to create a template for putting together model policies both on addressing bullying and on education and awareness programs for the schools. And, you know, basically what the bill does is it's kind of a four-step bill. One, it would require Department of Public Instruction to develop a model school policy and education awareness program. DPI has been very supportive of this. Matter of fact, we worked with them in putting this bill together. Secondly, school districts would need to adopt a policy regarding bullying. They would also have to distribute the policy to the students and parents annually. So, you know, usually we get a packet of information when we have our introduction at school with the kids. This way, it's not just put on the table one time and we forget about it. Every year, it's brought up again. And then on the Wednesday of the fourth week of September would be Bullying Awareness Day, and school districts could observe it if they so wish, so that we don't forget that it's an issue. We need to deal with our kids as they're coming up through the school system. That way, we need to deal with the issues later on once they've developed, you know, going into high school and beyond.
Yeah. So, I mean, you say that school districts could participate in this day or not, but what sorts of stuff would you do on Bullying Awareness Day?
Well, you know, actually, we've talked to different districts, and they've said that they would do everything from just posting it at the schools. Many of the schools have integrated television systems and communication systems throughout the classroom when they start off the day to remind people. Other schools have said they've actually have put together skits and other information for students to participate in and become aware. It's really open-ended to allow districts to, you know, apply it as they feel it would best address the issue and get the message out there to the kids.
I know that you're asking DPI to come up with the model policy. You haven't come up with it yourself personally, but this would mean defining bullying, wouldn't it? Wouldn't you have to say this is what constitutes bullying?
Yes, you know, because we don't have a definition, and we can't, you know, this is one of those issues that one size doesn't necessarily fit all. There are districts that have policies in place. They could keep their policy if they have it. If they don't have one, they can turn to DPI and use theirs as a boilerplate, or they can create a hybrid between things that they have in place and along with DPI. You know, we know that it takes on various forms and different degrees of sophistication. You know, we see everything from, it's not just kids pushing each other in a lunch line or taking somebody's lunch money at kind of that mm-hmm. old school thought. I mean, it's evolved into emailing and text messaging. It's mental tormenting. It's ostracizing other students. It has gotten to be, it far exceeds what we would consider as harassment to the point of where we're, you know, you're purposely trying to create either go so far as physical harm or to create mental harm to fellow students.
Yeah, and then this model policy would, besides defining bullying, would what talk about how to deal with it should it happen?
Right. How to put together a process of addressing it. And right now what happens is we've talked to teachers. Many teachers say, you know, we don't know what to do. You know, do you turn it over to, is it teacher's responsibility? I don't really think it's a teacher's responsibility. Is it the vice principal? Is it the principal? Is it the school board? Many times the buck gets passed around and around, and the issue is never addressed, and it continues to fester. And I've seen this. We've had testimony in the past from parents that have told us that it just continued from one grade to the next because nobody sought to create some sort of intervention. And this is what's needed. We need to go in and address the issue before it evolves into a bigger problem. Put a stop to it. And why would we want this to fester? You know, if other states can do it, we can do it.
This would be, by the intervention, would be somehow penalizing the person responsible for the bullying.
Right. And so many times the victims are so afraid to come forward because they don't feel that there's that support. They don't feel that there is a way to resolve the issue. And this would, again, address the bullies who are bullying the victims, who many times become bullies themselves in later years.
Yeah. So what it sounds like this has bipartisan support. If you have Senator Coggs as your co-author.
Oh, and that's what's the intention right from the start. Senator Coggs has been just great to work with. He and I have been friends for a number of years, going back to our days in the Assembly. And we know it's not a Milwaukee problem, it's not a Madison problem, it's not a Waukesha problem. It's something that's statewide, it's national in scope. And so we looked at this strictly from the viewpoint of what's in the best interest of our kids. Kids are there to learn in school. School should be a safe haven, not a place to fear.
Yeah, what's going to happen on Thursday then at this hearing?
Well, I think we're going to have a very positive response. Matter of fact, last time around in 2005, it was voted out of the Senate committee 6-1. And where it fell short was in the Assembly, where it came to a tie vote. And there have been legislators in the past that thought perhaps this is too much of a nanny culture, that government is being overreaching in its responsibilities in regard to the school systems. I argue that it is not. I mean, it is something that we all need to look at reasonable and well-balanced laws to help protect our kids and to enforce learning at schools. This works with DPI. It works and allows the districts the freedom to have choice and to adopt what's in their best interest. So it's a cooperative type bill that it really isn't a mandate per se, so much as it is a way of providing the tools and resources to address the problem.
Yeah, is there any money associated with it? Is this going to cost money?
Really, it's not a cost issue. DPI, since we started working with them in 2005. It has been putting on the finishing touches on evolving and providing a model to work with. There is no cost to the districts unless they want to go out and create their own. Some districts already have. They've actually invested money into it. For the most part, this is not a money issue at all, so much as it is you have a boilerplate you can adopt. If you've got a policy of your own, you can keep it. If you want to create one, you can go ahead. So there are various options. Money is not a factor in this.
We're talking with State Senator Neil Kedzie. He's a Republican from Elkhorn, author of SB 42, which addresses school bullying. It would direct the Department of Public Instruction to come up with a model policy to prevent, to deal with bullying in Wisconsin public schools. What do you think of this idea? What questions do you have? Should there be some sort of statewide effort to combat school bullying? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're tuned to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 12 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Monday, August the 20th. Coming up after 8 o'clock, we'll talk about the presidential debate, the Democratic presidential candidate debate in Iowa yesterday, and also review other news from the presidential campaign trail on both sides of the aisle coming up after 8 o'clock with a guest from Iowa who was watching this debate. Right now we're talking about school bullying and whether there ought to be a law in Wisconsin against school bullying, a statewide policy per se to define and prevent and penalize people who bully in schools. How big of a problem do you think this is? Have you ever had any experience with this in Wisconsin public schools? Maybe your children or grandchildren? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our guest is Neil Kedzie, a Republican state senator from Elkhorn, author of SB 42, which deals with the issue of school bullying. The bill gets a hearing on this Thursday at the state capitol. And Jack in Lake Geneva joins us. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hi, morning, Jack.
Good morning, Neil. I made the observation for the last couple of years, all my kids now have just gone through grammar school. I've got three kids, and most of the stories they came home with were that bullying was almost always, seemed to almost always occur either during recess or in the cafeteria or the school commons. And those tended to be the places where there wouldn't be so much direct school supervision, maybe volunteer parents or maybe just teachers walking through or principals walking through. It was more or less that's where all the stories, the bullying that my kids told me about seemed to occur, and I just wanted to know what your thoughts were on that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, matter of fact, a couple years ago in Milwaukee, as I mentioned, there was a news story that was done, and they did a survey in southeastern Wisconsin, and 29% of the students said that they had been bullied either at or on their way to school. We have found through discussions with a number of parents that they find that the text messaging has become kind of the tool of choice, if you will, to go at other students. Basically, what they're aiming to do is to try and ruin the reputation of someone else. They look at children who appear to be vulnerable, and they seek out those vulnerabilities, their Achilles heel, if you will. And that has gotten to be much, much used in the schools. I mean, things that we never had or would ever even have thought of. So, I mean, we do know that in Milwaukee they did have some instances where they had some cases like that occurring on the schoolyard where the monitors were not able to watch the kids. We've had it happen in some of my school districts that I represent. I don't think it's just restricted to those areas. Obviously, you can't have eyes in all places. The important thing is, how do you address the issue once it occurs? Because over half of the teachers that were surveyed in the same survey had said that the school wasn't doing a good enough job to try and prevent it. So locate where the problems are, where they're occurring. Let's address them.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm wondering, you know, it's obvious if some kid is, pushing someone down and stealing their lunch money, that's bullying. But is it so obvious if somebody, let's say, calls me Four Eyes because I wear glasses? Is that bullying?
Well, that's just it. It's not always obvious. And obviously, there's teasing, and then there's bullying. You know, there has to be a way to try to find, the important thing is looking at the how often does this occur? Is it being perpetrated by the same individual or individuals? And what is the degree of severity and what is the effect that it's having on the student? Those are the kind of things that DPI and school districts are starting to look at and are trying to need to find a way to define that. You're not going to be able to cover all your bases. It's not going to be all-encompassing. It's not going to eliminate bullying, but we're hoping that it has enough of an impact to reduce the frequency and the types, and at least let parents and let the ones that are being abused know that they have a means of defending themselves and that the school districts will also defend them so that they don't feel insecure and are, wind up going to the point where, the most negative effect that happens is kids get pushed into such a depression, and over time, this depression can be lifelong, and in severe cases, we've even seen kids that have committed suicide.
Yeah. How do you, though, stop a whole school? And I shouldn't say it would be everybody in the school, but if a bunch of kids are just teasing someone, calling someone a geek, calling someone, you know, whatever names, how do you stop that?
Well, you know, part of, like I said, the part of the bill is that you create an awareness program, too. The fact that it's not going to go away, and each year you have you reintroduce a whole new batch of kids into the next grade. You need to remind and enforce, most importantly, enforce the fact that, you know, we're here to respect each other. We're here to learn, and that there are better alternatives. Usually it's insecurities from the people that are the initiators of the bullying. Like I said, you can't stop it all. But the fact that to do nothing is no longer an option.
Yeah, so this could result, though, in the kid who's calling the other kid a geek that could get presumably detention or expelled from school even.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that school districts are best positioned to know how to deal with troublemakers in their schools. And that's why that door is open for them to help develop that policy internally without the state saying, well, this constitutes an act of bullying, this is what the punishment should be. That's not our duty. Our duty is to provide the ability for those schools to put those policies and encourage them to put those policies in place.
Yeah. Mary in Menominee, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Some of the same things that he's saying, and I am all for ending bullying, if that were at all possible. And but my question or my thought is that the bullying in the schools is a huge issue, but the schools aren't the end-all of the kids' social life. And just a week ago, talking to a friend whose grandson got caught in a lie to his dad, an untruth, because he told his dad he lost his swim goggles. And when, in fact, what had happened is some bigger kid had taken them and wouldn't give them back and didn't give them back. And so he didn't want another issue to be caused by him telling his dad to go to the parents, so forth and so on. So he took the easy way out, according to him, and just said that he lost them, dropped them at the raft and couldn't find them and so forth. So
you're saying this happened, though, outside of school.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. It was outside of school. And there are other situations, many other situations outside of school, where I guess what I'm thinking is retaliation. The bully gets cut down at school or reprimanded and then goes to the Y or whatever, and he's twice as hard on the next kid. I don't know.
Yeah. Senator Kedzie, what do you think about that?
Well, here's a couple different thoughts. One is this legislation does not attempt to do what parents are responsible for doing, that is raising their children and providing the best moral instruction for their kids so they grew up to be good people. You know, our kids spend about 7 hours a day in school. That's a large part of their day. We can't do anything for them outside of the school. That's where police action and police intervention winds up coming in. We're saying here at the school level, we don't have to make things criminal. We can deal with it at the school level. It is boys, it is girls equally involved in bullying these days. And what happens outside of school, we know that the kids have put together web pages, hate pages toward other students. That's where you wind up calling in the police to try and trace who those perpetrators are. But we can't take care of everything. What we're saying is, let's help provide those tools to say, listen, this is what you should have learned at home. We reinforce those same values at school. Hopefully this will help to lead to a reduction in the amount of bullying and the degree of bullying that's occurring.
Yeah.
And the problem is 78% of teachers feel that it is a problem in school, and over half of them believe the school's not doing a good enough job in dealing with it.
Yeah. Dick in Manitowish Waters, hi, you're on the air, and I'm sorry to say we're almost out of time.
Hi, I just wanted to make a point. You was talking about text messaging, and I wanted one thing that I went through. I have a phone that I give to my daughter, allow her to use. It's on my plan. It's my phone, and she was getting some texting. And I called my cell provider, and they made it basically impossible for me to get the list of messages in hard copy. If we could bring that, you know, they're taking more rights away from the you know, they give more rights to the people on the wrong end than they do the good people.
Well, Dick, I'm sorry. So your daughter was being bullied via text messaging?
Yes, yes. Mm. In order for me to get a hard copy to be able to verify what was going on, I would have had to get a court order and a subpoena to have those sent to me.
We only have about 30 seconds, Senator Kedzie. I'm not sure your bill would address that, though.
Well, that's really, you know, something that the bill itself cannot address.
Mm-hmm.
But we do know that, you know, in Kansas a couple years ago, there was a $250,000 settlement that was given to a family and their student because the school district failed to take appropriate steps to stop the bullying. This could happen in Wisconsin. We know that the issue exists. We can't turn a blind eye. And I think, again, what we're trying to do is create a balanced approach, not overreaching and working not only with the school districts, but also working with DPI. We can help.
Thank you so much for being with us.
You bet, Troy. Thank you very much.
Neil Kedzie, Republican State Senator from Elkhorn. Thanks to Leo Duran and Karen Prager for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine.